He says that according to Benin, a person that's generous, he says, is on the border of having all the midos. He says, and he quotes a pasuk over there. He says because he has a rochav halei, he has a certain broadness, generosity. The Gemara says about Iyuv, that Iyuv was a great tzaddik, and the Gemara says what was one of the great things about him was he never took change from the grocery store. He went to the grocery store, and they gave him $5, and the price was $4.90. He said, "Keep the 10 cents." That's what Gemara says. Gemara says, "Yeah." Gemara says that about Iyuv. Yeah. And Gemara praises him. It was a high level. Well, it shows that he's. What does it show really? It's an adivus. It's a generosity. See. It's a certain generosity. Certain generosity. Why is that such an important need? I mean, stinginess and on the all these on the contrary, their opposites are the worst thing. Just like generosity is the greatest thing, the opposite, stinginess, is the worst. So the one time that I said, the one time I asked the Vilna Gaon, which is worse? Is it worse for a person to be a spendthrift or to be stingy? It's either direction. Now, I mean, either one is bad. To spend more than his means is very bad also. And to be stingy is also bad. So the Gaon said, stingy is worse. Stingy is worse. Yeah, it makes sense. Well, stinginess is at least a person spending a lot has something to do with reality. He's enjoying himself. And he's stingy, that's the total fantasy. What? Yeah. He's good to himself at least. Yeah, something. All right, he's not totally rational. But stingy is completely irrational. He's not getting anything out of it. But the idea over here, what Rabbeinu says, that generosity is one of the most important midas. Why generosity? Why is generosity? And he says, from this midah, everything comes. That's why he says, aniyim, giving tzedakah, a person, he gives to an ani, not just to get tzedakah. He gives, you know what I mean? Belev tov, he says. He gives it, he says, umachonein aniyim ashrav. Machonein aniyim. Chonein means, chen means, from the word chen means from nothing. Chinam, comes from the word chinam. It means he's nice for no reason. The ani wasn't nice to him. He's just nice. He just has that niceness about him. See? So he says, Shehaniyim he motzim chayin be'enov. The no same lambayin yotha. The ani finds favor in his eyes and he gives it to him in a nice way. Tzedakah really, a very important thing in tzedakah is how you give. How you give. There are a lot of gemaras about basra on that. That how you give is more important than how much you give than the amount that he gives. The Gemara of Barbasa, all Gemara of Barbasa. How you give, the most important thing is, with the Oni, the important thing is to comfort him, to make him feel good. That's the most important thing to do for him. So at any rate, the doesn't mean that you should diminish on the amount and be nice at all. You can't do that. That's exchange. But the way you give it is very extremely important. But what the Rabbeinu Yonah means, what does Rabbeinu Yonah mean when he says, that the generosity, but in generosity, in not necessarily by name, in general, what does it mean? It means that he overcomes his pettiness, a certain pettiness. There's a certain pettiness in life which a person has, like he takes the change. It's $4.99, takes a penny change. See, so it's a certain pettiness, and it's an activity which brings out a person's pettiness, where he's not in the frame of reality anymore. Certain small-mindedness. He's not in the frame of reality. What does it mean? Another few cents. It doesn't mean anything. It's like, but if the person wouldn't get his change, he'd be shortchanged, he'd go crazy. He lost a dime. I mean, somebody got shortchanged, shout, you know what I mean? Quarter, shortchange, quarter. How much of a difference is it going to make in the person's life? A quarter. But it's that is really the petty emotion. See, the person is involved in their own pettiness. They're not involved. They're not involved in reality. There's no broadness where the person is in line with reality. Takes these things in line with reality. They tolerate a certain petty personality. It's like they have two frames of reference. One is reality, and then they get into the petty. In the petty world, it's like crazy. It reminds me of the Gemara says the Gemara says that the way you can tell a person is Kiso, Kaiso, and Koso. But the Gemara says also V'yeshom and Besachko. And he plays a game because he also, yeah, if he loses or if he's winning, how he's how important it is, means he allows himself to get caught up in the in a very petty frame. Pettiness. A person that's a generous person can't do that because he's a broad-minded individual. He's always in line with reality. I mean, it's another point. He goes, I get to the final point. What? Cheat it. No, that point. Plus the game for one point. Whole world. It could be an atom bomb somewhere. It doesn't matter. This is the important thing at the moment. It means he allows himself. There's a corner of his mind which can overtake him, and he becomes the most ridiculous individual. Pettiness. Small-minded. Generosity, that's what the divas is. The divas is a certain generosity, a certain broad-mindedness, where the person is chonein. The ani is no sechein. Why? Because it is not because the ani is, this particular ani is no sechein. It means he doesn't have the pettiness. This guy's coming to ask me for money. Want something from me. Can't stand it. Get him out of here. See? That's the petty emotion. He's not a petty individual. That's what generosity is. Generosity is where he's above that small-mindedness and the pettiness. So that need is the most important need. That's our Beni on the learn. That's Ayin Tovah. That's the most important need. If you have that need, he says, then you're on the road, because you're out of the world of the small-mindedness and the pettiness of your own inner emotions, and then you could be ready to deal with big areas, big ideas, perfection. And you're ready for perfection. But as long as you have that corner of your mind which has that small-mindedness, you're not ready for perfection. Yeah. Yeah, Donnie's right. Ayin Tov is found in Chazal. If I say that if no same by Ayin Tov, by Truma, he gives 1 in 40. If he's stingy, it's 1 in 60. So you see, Ayin Tov means generosity. Generosity is a big thing in the eyes of Chazal. Generous person. I think they say it from Rasul Salanta. Rasul Salanta said that Baal Musa, he says that when a person has a few dollar bills in his wallet and he has to pay for something, he gives out the worn dollar bill. That's the I think that's just about carrying that emotion to the farthest extent. Yeah.
You know, you got nothing.
Yeah, life.
There's
something wrong with this. The various methods of a person attaining perfection. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai then proceeded to ask, first he asked the Talmidim, what is the way that a person, the best way that a person should improve himself? And they gave him, each one gave him his answer. And he agreed with who? With Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. Because he said that his answer was all inclusive. And he proceeded to ask the converse. He said, "What would be the worst thing that? What would be the worst the worst midah, the worst trait that a person can have?" So he says. So each one gave their own answer. So Rabbi Eliezer said, "Ayin Ra." Okay, so according to the Rambam, Ayin Ra means a person who's dissatisfied. A person who's dissatisfied. All right, he's unhappy. He always feels he needs more. He's unhappy with what he has. That's right. According to Ben Yonah, it means stinginess. That's the Ayin Ra, a stingy person. That's the worst trait that a person can have. Okay. Then you have Yeshua said, Chover Ra. Chover Ra. All right, a bad friend. Why is a bad friend? Because the good friend is the one that helps the person towards objectivity. And the bad friend means the one that, on the contrary, that works along with the side of his nature that's emotional. See, that's why it works out that the opposite in this case It's not all the time. Like Rabbi Yonah points out, he says that why did he have to ask this question? If he already stated what the best way is, so of course the opposite is the worst. But that's not necessarily true. Not necessarily true. The worst thing, it's not always true that if something is the best, that the opposite is going to be the worst. When is it not true? I mean, I could say that the best car is the most luxurious car. I mean, the most luxurious car could be the best car, but it doesn't necessarily mean the worst car is the car that's not luxurious. Worst car could be a car that doesn't have an engine. It doesn't work. The converse doesn't always work. When does it work in both ways? When does it work both ways? It works both ways if you're dealing with something that's essential. With something that's essential, the best and the worst have to be the same. You see. So, over here, however, so if that's the case, since the first five answers were essential, so there would be no need to repeat it. There would be no need to repeat it, because since they're essential, so you're not dealing with accidental things, you deal with essential. But the answer is that even though it's essential, it doesn't necessarily mean that it'll be so in this situation. Because here, you're talking about something that's essential, but you're talking about external situations that relate to that essence. So it's not necessarily true that the opposite external situation will be the worst thing. That depends. In other words, a good friend. A good friend is something which helps a person essentially, because it means a good friend is somebody who helps an individual see objectively about himself. But it doesn't necessarily mean that a bad friend is going to be the worst thing. A bad friend could simply be the absence of a good friend. But in this case, a bad friend is really the worst. Why is a bad friend the worst? Because a person has two components. He has the objective component, and he has the subjective component. One, the subjective component drives him away from reality. The objective component drives him towards reality. Now, the good friend is the one that awakens the objective part of man. So therefore, he improves him. And the bad friend, on the other hand, is the worst thing, because he awakens the subjective part. And he goes along with his own subjectivity, you see. So that's why he says that a bad friend would be really the worst possible thing for man, because it would make it impossible, drive him to a situation. You see, a person's objectivity is very limited and it's very frail. So if he has an external reality that joins his subjectivity, then it's hopeless for him to be able to ever see the objective. That's the way man works. The only hope that man has to see the objective, it's a very frail mechanism with which he sees the objective. But when he has a friend is considered, with a friend, it's an objective situation, so then he has the objectivity, has something to grasp onto. But conversely, it works just the opposite. The subjectivity of man, a person likes to remain with his subjectivity. And if there's anything in reality that it can grasp onto, then there's no hope that it's going to that it'll ever subside, it'll ever retract or remove itself, because then it'll remain subjective. That's the way the mechanism works. Actually, what people would consider today's definition of a good friend in today's world really would be a person that treats another individual's fantasies as if they're reality. I would say that would probably be the definition of a good friend in today's society. But that's not the good friend that they're talking about. Because the good friend that we expect, what we expect from our friends, is not objectivity, but rather the objectification of our own emotions. That's the chavura. Okay. Now, the next one was shachin ra. Shachin ra. Why is shachin ra the worst thing according to this particular Tana? Why is it the worst thing? Yeah. Because really you have it, it's in this week's parsha. In this week's parsha. Oz Yashir Moshe and Ashira. So Ashir Lashem ki go Sis Rach Ram Vayam. So why does God become great? Because Sis Rach Ram Vayam. So Rashi says Because when God does a din with the Rishoyim, so then his name becomes great. So to witness the success of the Russia, when the Russia is successful, is the worst thing. Because this gives people the impression that this is the... it gives the instincts a basis, the basis that they want, that in reality this is really the way of life. So if you have a neighbor who is bad, I mean, it means he's living an instinctual life, and you see him walking into his house every day, and he sees, he smiles, he's happy, you know. Yeah, the instincts are there. There it is. That's exactly the life. That's the kind of a life. Yeah. Because most people, right, because part of most people's motivation is always to demonstrate that they're living a great life. I mean, that seems to be something that people always try to do, no matter what lifestyle they choose. Make sure that other people are convinced that the way they're living is the right way. This is the best way to live. Their lifestyle is the best. So, therefore, the Shachin Ra is the most harmful influence. Because he's the one that lives next door to you, and since he's living in a bad way, and he's always going to demonstrate to you how great his life is, what a great life he's having, so your instincts are immediately going to catch on to that and say, oh, that's it, that's the way of life. See? And that is the worst influence. It's the opposite of the other influence. Because since man has these two parts in his makeup, there's one part that has a vague perception of reality, you see, but it's there, and the other part is the instinctual part, so whatever model he sees, and which is constant to him, that's the model that part of him is going to grab onto. That's why he says that the worst thing is a Shachin Ra. So in this case, that's why the converse is true. Yeah, Reb Shimon was the one that said that Horoas Anola, that what is the most, what is that factor which perfects man to the greatest degree? It's the ability to be able to assess how his state is going to be in the future, to have a constant grasp on reality. In other words, he doesn't change personalities. And he says that the worst thing would be the converse, an individual who constantly changes. One point he thinks one way, his emotions he's convinced one way, and then the next time he's convinced another way. There is no common personality. That's the worst possible thing. That has to be the way, because of course there's nothing to work with. And then the last one that said that Lev Tov, you remember, was Machlokas. According to the Rambam, Lev Tov meant the person who has the perfection of the Midos. It means he has the even keel. So he says the worst thing is to be off the even keel. That's the worst possible thing. In the even keel, the person lives a moderate life, and a life in which he has many satisfactions, but not a lot of one satisfaction. No extremes. That was the way the Rambam explained it. So he said the worst thing is to be off the even keel. Off the even keel is the worst thing. That's, he went awry. His psyche went awry. So
what's the difference between a rowing?
And according to Rabbeinu Yonah, a rowas and leif tov meant a person who submits to reality. The worst thing, therefore, and the worst thing is exactly the converse. Since it's essential. If it's essential, the converse has to be the converse. If it's situational, it doesn't have to be the converse. The situational could depend. The best thing could be the situation, and the absence of the situation doesn't necessarily have to be the worst thing. But that's because, that was, we explained, because of the fact that man has two elements, so therefore the converse works over there. But in this case, the converse works simply because it's essential. Once it's essential, the converse has to be that way. That's why he asked them both ways, because really there's two reasons why the converse works in this case. Converse doesn't logically have to work. It works in this case because either it's essential, an essential trait, or else because the man has a dual nature. You understand what I mean? That's why he asked them both ways. What's the best and what is the worst? Okay. There is one interesting thing in this memra, a side point actually, but it's an interesting statement of the Chachamim. When they asked Reb Shimon, what is the worst thing? So he said, Halova v'eino mishalem. We mentioned, it's a person that borrows and doesn't repay. Echad halova, then he said like this. Why? Because that's precisely the example of a person who who doesn't know how, doesn't have a grasp of reality. Because at the time when he borrows, he's convinced he's going to repay. Otherwise, he'd steal. It's not stealing. He's convinced he's going to repay. But then, when the time comes to repay, it's a different, he's in a different frame of mind already. Well, he doesn't need the money, And therefore, he doesn't repay. His mind changes. That's the perfect example of an individual. Because with money, many times you see, money demonstrates the essential way that a person relates to his greed. I mean, in general, see, you have in the Tfilas Nila, I mentioned a lot of times. You have over there, it says that Menachama, and actually it's a pasuk, Menachama Sheva Kapan. L'man nechdal me'oshek yedena, Oshek yedena, because Oshek, greed, is something which represents a major thrust of the human personality. That's, so therefore, love, v'ein mashalim, represents the person who doesn't realize, has no knowledge of his own personality. One time he's convinced he's going to repay. Next time he's not going to. Next time his mind changes, he's a different individual. That is a person who doesn't have a grasp on reality. Has no grasp on reality. Okay. But the strange thing is that it's he quotes a pasuk here. The pasuk says lo v'rasha v'lo lishalem, the wicked person borrows and doesn't repay, v'tzadik chonein v'nosen. But a tzadik chonein v'nosen. Chonein means from the word chain. The word chain means he gives freely. Chain means from chinam. It means nothing. Tzadik chonein v'nosen. He gives freely without any. It's like for nothing. For nothing. Gives for nothing. It means really he gives with. He doesn't need the obligation to give. He's a giver. That's what it means. Now, fine. But the way Chazal understood that pasuk is not the simple interpretation. I'd like to know why. The Rambam has. Rambam's like this. The Rambam says, "Vu amro halo v'en mashalim shelo yuveyu davar achakach." Says, "Vu pulchisus amida v'tzadik chonein v'nosein." When it says that the tzadik gives freely, he says, "Ze tzadiko shel olam." This is the righteous one of the world. Vu Hashem yisbarach, and that's God. Shenemar. Tzadik v'yosherhu. It says God is righteous and he's just. V'chein v'ata tzadik al kol abo aleinu. Pirush, now, so we call God a tzadik. He says, so what does it mean that tzadik is chonein v'nosein? He says, pirush means like this. Chonein l'odom hamal v'lachavero. V'eino mishalim lo. V'eino mishalim. He says, he gives to the man who lends the money. God gives to the man who lends the money, and this individual is not repaid. So he says, "Meshalim lo Hakadosh Baruch Hu." God pays him back. Chelef avodoso, because of his work, his deed. Shegomal chesed luzuloso, because he did kindness to somebody else. Lelavoso, to lend the money. Ad shetasig yada. Until the person would have it, would be able to get on his feet, day machzor, until he'd be able to have what he needs. The kasher motzi yodo v'lo yeshalem l'malveyu, and when this person was able to pay back and didn't pay back, he says, Hashem yisbarach mashalim lo, God pays him back. All right, an interesting statement. It's an interesting statement. And Rashi says the same thing. He just says it briefly. Tzadik chonein v'nosein, tzadiko shel olam, hu amako. Nusachachav, tzadik chonein v'nosein, kodesh baruch hu, tzadik chonein v'nosein, l'mal. First of all, why did they take the pasuk out of its plain context, plain interpretation? And secondly, what kind of a statement is this? What does it mean? I mean, if you mean to say that God is just, all right, so we say he's always just. So it's always that way. The person, somebody steals something from somebody, so, and the person doesn't deserve to suffer the loss, so God makes sure that he won't suffer the loss, will get paid back. So that's general hashgacha. What does that have to do? Why in specific love of Rosh Hashanah with Tzadik Chonein V'Nosein? Why didn't they just say plain? Sure. What's the answer? Well, actually, it could say that the pasuk makes sense. Lova Russia Velo Yeshele. The Russia borrows. And even where he has an obligation, he doesn't pay back. But a tzaddik is schonein venosin. A tzaddik gives freely. You see? Tzaddik schonein venosin. A tzaddik even without an obligation. It does. There is a balance to the pasuk. What doesn't the Chum like about this pasuk? Tzaddik schonein venosin. What it means is like this. The answer is they could not accept that tzaddik schonein venosin does not make sense by a bus of a dam. And it's impossible for a bus of a dam to do it. There's no such phenomenon. Can't be. That was the story with the. That's what story when the owner came back. Vinei alei zayis tarach b'fia. So the Yonah, when he came back from the Teva, so he came back with the alei zayis, with the leaf of the olive leaf. So Chazal say that what was the Yonah showing Noach? He was saying that Tov mar me'akadosh baruch hu. I'd rather have something bitter from God, mimasok m'bnei adam, than something sweet from man. Because the Yonah lived 12 months from Noach. Noach was feeding it, and then when he went out, so the first time he was in his natural habitat, and he ate what he naturally had. And it was Elazias. Elazias is bitter. But the Chacham used that as a mashal to demonstrate the idea that and it's interesting, there is, the Gemara says, Mimasov b'nei adam, so Rashi says, Zenoach. So, Rav Henoch Leibowitz one time asked, he said a very nice pshat, he says, why does it say Zenoach? Obviously talking about Noach. So he said, no, he says, because Zen Noach means this Noach himself was really, the Gemara says that he hardly slept during the 12 months because he was so busy taking care of all the animals in the Teva. So, and then it says the lion bit his, got angry at him, bit his thumb off, and all kinds of things he suffered during that time. He worked very hard. So Zen Noach means Noach really represented the person who was given over to a cause of the highest degree possible. So Zen Noach means even a person like that, even the greatest person, the person who can give freely, is still Tov Marmei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why it's saying in Berachas HaMazon, V'loli Dei Matnas Basar Adam. Why Loli Dei Matnas Basar Adam? Because a person, a human being, cannot give. The Tzadik Chonein V'Nosein, so Chazal say, cannot be speaking about a human being. Is that tzaddikah shalolam? That's God. That's chonein venosin. Because God is by God, because by man, when man gives, there's always his nature is such that he needs something in return. See? There's no such thing as chonein. No such thing as chonein. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one. God is the only one that's a chonein venosin. He gives freely because he's not giving because of any return or any need. He's not giving out of a need. He's giving because it's his nature to give. That's chonein venosin. That's part of his nature. Zeh tzaddik shalom. That's the pasuk.
What about by?
So I'm not saying that man cannot partake of it to some degree. To some degree, yes. To some degree, and in a certain human way, it's possible. There are different levels of giving. I mean, we know there's certain different levels of perfection. Man can a certain amount, but to say outright chonein venosin is impossible. That's impossible. He can partake of the mida. I mean, we're supposed to try to emulate God, so mahata. We try to emulate his midos. Try to be a nosin also, but to say just openly, straight the chonein venosin, it's impossible to that type of modification of adjective with regard to man is impossible. Doesn't exist. So that's why Chazal say that there is no contrast in this pasuk. What it means is they interpret the pasuk differently. That lo v'rasha v'lo yishalim, the wicked person borrows and doesn't pay back. But the tzaddik, God, chonein venosin, God pays back that malva, that person that lent him the money and suffered the financial loss, God pays him back. That's the way they interpret the pasuk. So now we have to understand. Now, what does it What does it mean? Why is it so? If it's just saying that God evens out all the unjust situations, so that's the general thing we say in general. I mean, there's Ashgacha Pratius. There's Ashgacha Pratius. Why specific over here? That Tzadik Choni Venosim? Why? What does it mean? What's the answer? See, the answer is, take a look what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, the Tzadik Choni Venosim, he says, Meshalim lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God repays him chelef avodoso, shegomal chesed lezuloso, lelavoso ad shetasig yodo de machsaro. He says, it's a repayment because of the fact that this person did a good lezuloso for somebody outside himself, somebody else. And he did a good for somebody else, he says. And therefore, in order to help him to have what he needs, shetasig yodo de machsara, to have what he needs. So what it means is that a person who does that action, he partakes of God's midah to that degree that is humanly possible, becomes under the hashgacha of God's midah of chonei venosei. That's what it means. He becomes related to that midah. Since he becomes related to that midah, he is involved in a special hashgacha. That's what the pasuk says. If he partakes of that midah, so then he is involved in a special hashgacha, and therefore it's not just like the regular. It's different than the usual hashgacha. The usual hashgacha, you see, the usual hashgacha depends on the person's general level. His general level. So if he's not on the level, so then there is no hashgacha. But over here, what the Maimon Chazal is telling us is that if a person partakes of that characteristic, then he falls under the hashgacha, insofar as Chonei Venosin is concerned, and God repays him. That's what the statement is. The way the Rambam describes it, it has to be a true act of chesed. It has to be on a true level. It can't be just that he gave the person money. Because the Rambam says, he gave chesed, lezuloso. Zuloso means somebody outside of himself. And tolach de machsoro. If he was on that level that he was able to appreciate the other individual situation, and he did an act of chesed insofar as humanly possible, you see, then he falls under the hashgacha of God's chonei venosei. And God repays him. So it means he has a special hashgacha. It's different. It's different than his general position, his general situation, where a person is generally under the hashgacha to a certain degree, and not under the hashgacha to a certain degree. But over here, he's directly under the hashgacha. If in this action he actually partook of the midah of chesed, then he's under the special hashgacha. That's what the Rambam says. That's where Chazal understand the pasuk. The reason why the term tzaddik is used is because that's precisely the connection. In other words, why is the person under the hashgacha if he gives freely? Because since he's emulating God and he's partaking of a midah of being a tzaddik, so therefore he's repaid by God. So the term tzaddik is used in relation to God in this instance because really it's a common right. It's the common. It's so to speak. I mean, it can't be a common characteristic of man and God, but it means to say man partakes of that quality. The term tzaddik really is an explanation as to why the person is under this hashgacha. He's under this hashgacha because he's emulating the ultimate tzaddik, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Since he's emulating the ultimate tzaddik, so the ultimate tzaddik relates to it. The term tzaddik is used because it's in relationship to man. The term tzaddik. But that's what it means. It means there's a special hashgacha. Special hashgacha for a person who does a true act of chesed. Okay. The Torah has the greatest respect for human perfection, but the Torah knows also human weakness. That's why even when it comes to a Talmud Chacham, the Gemara says, Chabdeyu v'chashdeyu. Respect them and suspect them. Don't be so quick to evaluate them. You see, a person knows how to learn, Chabdeyu, very nice, but chashdeyu, you have to be careful. You have to investigate. But with regard to an ordinary individual, certainly, that the person is the person is subject to witness. And if you don't lend them in front with aid and with witnesses, what you're doing is you're giving him a situation where he can become worse. You're helping him out. So you're helping him out to become worse. So you're not allowed to do that. You have to do it in front of witnesses. Witnesses, he knows the concrete thing. He can't deny it. That's halacha. The only guy said, the pasuk, the only guy used to like to find ramazim from the psukim in the Torah, the different halachas of the Rabbana. So the pasuk says, in kesef tal ve'es ami, es ha'ani imach. So again, it says, in kesef tal ve, if you lend money, es ami. It must be done in public, in front of the witnesses. Es ha'ani, but when you give tzedakah, imach. Just between you and him. That's the member. All right. The next member. They said three things. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. It's an interesting thing. He said, what does it mean, Hema Mushlosh Devarim? They said three things. They said more than three things. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains what it means like this. They would say these three things every day. See, Kenyan Sheomru Marginisa Bafume the Rav. The Gemara says that Rav always had this little jewel in his mouth. It means this little statement that he would say. So it says Bedvarim Atzrichim Tadir, with things that a person requires all the time. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, you see from that statement alone a certain outlook that Chazal had, a certain philosophical and psychological outlook that they had. I mean, they felt that there are certain things that a person requires that he should constantly be aware of. Requires perfection demands that he's constantly turning towards these ideas. So these ideas are with him all the time, and that's a part of perfection. That a person has to have certain ideas that are constantly a part of his nature. That's the only way he's going to improve himself. That's the only way he'll move ahead. And each one had certain things that they would constantly think about. So now it says the first one. First one said, Rabbi Eliezer said like this: Yehi chavod chavercha choviv alacha kishalach. The honor of your friend should be as dear to you as your own. Should be as dear to you as your own. Valti noach lichos, and you shouldn't get angry very easily. And v'shuv yom echad lefnei misascha. And you should do tshuva, repent one day before you die. Yeah. What is the first one? The first one is that a person, where Rabbeinu Yonah explains it like this, that a person should run after the honor of his friend just like he's running after his own honor. To run after the honor of his friend. And he should wish that they should give this friend of his honor. Right. It's an inherent contradiction. Because if you are, the definition of honor means that you're singled out. So if you're singled out, so if you want honor, so then it means that you're singled out. Now how could you want your friend's honor just like your honor? Your friend's honor means that you're not singled out. Yeah, but honor by association, honor by association, it's not quite as much as... not quite as much as yours. So how is it possible really to have such a desire? I mean, you shouldn't run after honor. So what are you running after his honor for? What are you running after his honor?
That's equivalent to saying you haven't came
up. So what is the pshat really? What's the pshat?
Referring to a chaver, a true chaver, or a...
True chaver. The answer is that there's two types of honor. There's an honor which a person has, which is a personal honor. A personal honor. That's the honor that most people are looking for. But then there is an objective honor. There's a certain honor that represents the kavod of an adam. Kavod, for instance, you have kavod abrios. Kavra Brias, we say, Kavra Brias is Doche Drabon, as Drabon. Kavra Brias is Doche Drabon. Doche Ase Shebetara means Drabon. The Ase is, the Ase is, Apetar Shayrucha. That's the Ase. So, you see how great the Kavra Brias is. So, what is Kavra Brias? Kavra Brias means that if a person recognizes that an Adam is the Maisei Yadav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Adam represents something, that man has an intellect, he has Chachma, represents something. It's something that warrants respect. Now, Kavra Brios apparently is not just in general, but Kavra Brios is in specific also. If a person receives a certain honor, an individual receives a certain honor. It's an honor not just for that individual, but it should be viewed as an honor for the entity of Adam. It's an honor for the entity of Adam. The person, the human being is praised. It's not just a praise for that particular person. It's a praise that involves the species of man. It involves the species of man, that man can reach that height, that man can reach that level. It's a praise for the species of man. So what Chazal say is that a person should look at kavod in a different way than people usually do, not in a personal way, but on the contrary, that a person is gets kavod, a person made a great discovery and people respect him, the kavod is not his, it's not so much that it's his personal kavod, but this kavod represents the respect of man, the respect of the species man. This individual has demonstrated what man really can do, the level of mankind. So therefore, if a person looks at kavod in that way, he looks at a particular kavod in that way as representing the kavod of man, then he'll run equally towards his own kavod and towards his friend's kavod. The same way. There won't be any difference. If he perceives kavod as being such a medium, that's what kavod really is, Tam. That's what kavod is. It's a different kind of kavod, not personal kavod. It means that the idea of kavod, what Chazal say is that the idea of kavod should be converted and should be used in its proper perspective. It has its perspective. The great scientist uncovers some idea in nature, some idea, some chachma nature, he should be given kavod. Why should he be given kavod? Not personally. He should be given kavod because what he has done reflects the kavod of Brios, reflects the kavod of man. And man deserves kavod. Man is an individual that deserves kavod. You see, the halacha insists that kavod of Brios is docha, pushes away the asay of the Torah. So that's really what it means. That's the concept of kavod. It's a different concept of kavod. Yes, important would be what the person's on it for. If he's on it for the wrong thing, then it wouldn't make any sense altogether. But Albert Einstein one time said that he said he doesn't understand why he should get any kavod, any honor for his discovery. He said because the greatness of the discovery really is the enjoyment of the discovery itself. He says a person shouldn't. If a person would say that he wants honor for it, it would show that really this is the small thing. Yeah, this is nothing. I'm doing this as a means to the honor.
That's a form of pride.
So that's why he said a person who makes a great discovery should not be given any honor. Because he has the enjoyment of the discovery itself. He got everything right. What are you giving him honor for? But the truth of the matter is Chazal say differently. Chazal would say no, that he should be honored. But why should he be honored? In a different way. Exactly. To show what man, it's Kavod HaBrios. What man can achieve, and this Kavod HaBrios is tied with Kavod of God, because what the knowledge, the ability that we have to understand is a direct result of God's giving us the Tzelem Elokim. So it really is, ultimately, Kavod HaBrios is Kavod HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a different type of honor, different type of respect. It's true. It works the opposite way also. Chazal say that in Russia, if a person is evil, Mevaza HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kidva Hashem Bazav, it's Mitzvah Sohefa, the Pasuk says. On the contrary, where a person Where a person is a Rasha, so he destroys it. The Gemara says it's Machra himself and the whole world, Karst to Kari. That's the whole idea. The whole idea of the Torah is. Avi mentioned something. It's exactly what we're talking about. The halacha is a person. Yeah, it's a pasuk in the Torah, actually. Right, very good idea. The pasuk says that when you hang the niskolin is nitlin. We didn't have hanging in the Jewish courts as a method of execution. But after skila, so they would hang the person publicly. But it was only done; they just put him up and cut him right down. The pasuk says, "Lo solin nivloso alaitz." You're not allowed to let his body hang on the stick that's holding him up. Why? Kikilas elokim tolu. Kikilas elokim tolu. See why? Because this is it's a kilas elokim. Because man reflects God. Because he's the tzelem elokim. So if this person distorted his tzelem elokim to the point where he was a Rasha and he was chayav misa, so when you're hanging him, you're not just hanging him. What you're doing is it's a reflection on God, because he's the tzelem elokim, and it's a reflection of God's creation. So therefore, you're not allowed to do it. So not to hang him at all would be not showing that what he did was wrong. But in hanging him itself, there is another element there. The other element is that it's degrading God. So therefore, you have to remove him immediately. Just put him up and take him right off. That's a pasuk in Torah. Kill us alakim tolu. That's a pasuk in Torah. That's the degradation of God. That's bizi Hashem. Hashem buzzer. What? Lost the time is a muscle, right? That's right. That's a pasuk in the Torah. It's an open pasuk in the Torah. The fact that man was given an intellect with which he can understand reality, of which God is the source, ties him inherently ties him to God. That's his relationship to God. He's two things. He's an individual, but he's representative of the species. And that's exactly what we're saying here, that an individual who receives an honor because he did a great thing, it's not just as an individual, it's as a representative of the species. As a representative of the species, he should run after such honor, because that's an honor that's covered up rios. And if you perceive honor in that way, the honor of your chavra will be equal to your own honor. Yes. Or it says, hearer, he does the actual avera, so he only sins with his physical part. The avera itself, but the hearer of avera, planning the avera, that involves the intellect. That means the person is using the intellect as an instrument, as a means of doing something evil. That's the worst corruption that's possible. That's what Chazal say. That hearer avera, kashm avera. Rambam mentions in the Gemara. A very good question, Steve. Steve Zolstein is asking. He says that we're saying that hearer of avera is kashm avera. If a person plans an avera, it's worse than the avera itself, because he's using his mind as a means to achieve evil, where it was given to him as a means to understand the greatest beauty. So how come Chazal say that machshava ra, that a bad thought, ain't a kadosh baruch hu mitzrach lamaisa? God does not consider a bad intention as an action. The Gemara says in Kedushin. But the Gemara says only by Jews. By Gaim, the Gemara says it's mitzraf alamaisa. That's what the Gemara says. That's the standard also. Yeah. The answer is like this. The answer is that you have to understand what's meant by machshava. Machshava means, you see, where the Rambam and where Chazal say that hira aver kashm aver, it means where the person actually performs an avera and it's premeditated. He plans it. So Chazal say that the worst part of his deed was not so much the physical, what he did physically, but the worst part was the actual planning, defiling the intellect and using it for as a means of avera. That's what they mean in that statement. In the other statement, they talk about something else. They say machshava ra means a person has a bad thought. A person has a bad thought. A human being is prone to bad thoughts. So there, the Gemara is saying that bad thoughts really are not considered maisa. What does it mean? It's not considered maisa. It means it's something which temporarily he's involved temporarily in, but it's not really going to result in anything. The Gemara says that's only by a Jew. Why? Because since a Jew has the whole system of perfection, so therefore the bad thought is not contained in a medium in which it's going to really express itself, because the individual is constantly involved in perfection. Whereas the guy, since the guy doesn't have the system of perfection, so the bad thought really is more than just a crossing passing fancy. It's the bad thought is really something which expresses a deeply rooted part of his personality. That's the only part of his personality that he has. So therefore, it's mitzrafalamaisa means it's evil. It's as if he did it. But by a Jew, we don't say that, because since he has a whole system of perfection, so the bad thought is an extraneous thing. The bad thought is one part of his nature, but the other part of his nature will correct it. You see. But where we say Yehuri Avera, Kashi Me Avera, there we're discussing a premeditation. Whether it's not a question of the person of Machshava Ra. It means he's actually involved in a premeditated act of evil. There, I mean, on the contrary, there you see the fact that he did it shows that the level wasn't just Machshava. The level was really involvement. You see? Exactly. In other words, in that case, the thinking and the planning wasn't, you can't say in a kash baruch mitzrafa lemaisa, because on the contrary, you see that thinking and planning resulted in a concrete action. That means he really was involved in that. That's a concrete premeditation. That's definitely worse than the other. Machshava means where the person doesn't do it. Machshava ra means it crosses his mind, but he doesn't do it. It's not premeditated. It's not something which he's not planning. Crosses his mind, thinks about it. So thinking about it, the Gemara says, depends on the type of person you are. If you're a person on a high level, so every individual has two sides to his nature. So one side is operating now. Yeah, but 10 minutes later, the other side will take over. So it's not considered anything. It's nothing. It's not really reflective of his essential nature. Whereas by a guy who has nothing else, and he's like an empty desert, one foot comes in, that's it. It's going to take over. So that's mitzrafa lemaisa. It's part of his nature. That's what Chazal means. Okay.
Okay, February 10th. 1985,
Shir. You understand what I mean? It's not the kavod. In other words, the kavod for a father and a mother really is kavod shemayim. It's kavod shemayim. Hukish kivadum l'kavod amakom. Because they're the cause of your existence, and that reflects the ultimate cause of your existence. So that's why it's there. But the point is, if that was the case, so you would think, if that's the case, so then they're not in charge of this kavod. They can't be mochel covered. They want to say, you know, forget it. We don't care. We're not particular about it. So you'd say they have no right to do it because it's not their covered. But the Gemara says no, they have a right to do it. The same thing with the covered of a rod. Why is that so? It seems to be a contradiction. I mean, if it's not their covered, so then it's God's covered. So what right do they have to say that we're willing to forgive? But the answer is it is God's covered. But the way God formulated it was that he gave it, he placed it in charge of these two individuals, the father and mother. It's in their charge. In other words, they're the ones that it was given to them because they reflect God. But it was given to them. That's the form, that the particular form that the cover takes. You understand what I mean? The next prediction. It's in their jurisdiction. So they can do whatever they want. And that's God's cover. God gave it over to them. It's in their charge. It's under their jurisdiction. That's the way the halacha formulated. That's the same thing with the hesped also. That the hesped was given over. That's why the person can be mochel the hesped. Was given over to him. That's what I mean. But when the hesped is done, it is definitely covered up brias in general. In other words, it's in his charge, but it's covered up brias in general. If you see the whole idea of the hesped of kol shein amar demas aladam kosher, that is a chiyuv to be maspid and to be married the most. And it's halacha for the, definitely halacha for the chayim, there's no question about it. The Gemara's question, Sanhedrin, is simply who's in charge, halachically. Who's in charge halachically? But definitely it's a key in the covered of brief in general. Kvura is covered hadam, but Kvura wasn't given over to the gavra. Kvura wasn't given over to the gavra. Kikilasalakim taloi, not allowed to have a person who was a Russian, not allowed to have him hanging. Why? Because Kilasalakim taloi. Because that's not given over, that's covered up, beast wasn't given over to the individual. But the Hesper was. And the next point is Va'alti Noach Lichos. And you shouldn't be easy to anger. Because the point is Avodah Zorah, the whole idea of Avodah Zorah is, all the Avodah Zorah, they had one thing in mind. What they wanted to do was, they want to construct reality according to their own emotions. They project their own emotions onto reality. Okay? That's Avodah Zorah. That's Avodah Zorah. It's a self, it's an egocentric type of worship. It's their own crazy emotions, their own primitive emotions. They want to control reality. What is the Avodah, what is the Avodah Zorah really concerned with? I mean, if you look at primitive idolatry, and you should know, I mean, the primitive is found in modern society too. Modern society is pretty primitive also. No contradiction with all the technologically advanced and psychologically primitive. So the idea of the primitive man is, that's why it's important to study primitive man. Yeah. It's good to study primitive man. Now the Rambam was the first one that made that observation in the Maran Avochim. The Rambam said if we understood primitive man better, he says we'd understand a lot of the ideas of the Torah much better. And the Rambam studied the books that he had available to him at that time. That time was Nabataean culture. So the Rambam studied those books on the Avodah Zorah, how they worshipped, and they made a whole study of it. He said that if we, that's the genius has insight, tremendous insight sometimes. I mean, you know, like it's a certain intuition that he knows where to go for the answer. He knows. So the Rambam sensed that if you studied primitive man, you'd have a greater insight into man. And that's why he made this study himself. I mean, you have a greater insight into a lot of the reasons of the Torah, he said. And he had available to him at that time certain books which he study thoroughly, and he drew certain conclusions from them. He mentions them in the Mora. Very interesting. It's amazing how, you know, I mean, how ahead of his time he was, that he realized that that there's a big source of knowledge in this area. So the primitive idolaters, what they do is, there is basically, essentially, it's a system which is protective. Because they're worried about the lightning, insecure, the fields won't grow, and the, you know, there was all the different things that they're concerned about, fears. So therefore, they develop a whole elaborate system. And the system is only a self-seeking system. It's not. There is no appreciation, inherent appreciation of something greater in the system itself. Whereas Yadis is just the opposite. Yadis is an appreciation of the reality of God, who is greater. And it makes a person feel very small. It's appreciation of the universe, appreciation of Chochmah, and it's the exact opposite. Man feels very small. That's why, as I'll say, the highest level is Anova, Moshe Rabbeinu, Ish Moshe Anov Nikol Adam, because that's really the height of the system. It goes in the opposite direction of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is egocentric, just to serve the self-serving. So that's why Chazal equate anger with Avodah Zarah. But what is anger really? When a person gets angry, it means he can't tolerate the way reality is treating him. He can't tolerate it. So and anger is an expression of an attempt to change reality. That's what it is. It's a frustration. It's a frustration with reality. That's what anger really is. Anger is frustration with reality. That's the definition of anger. So therefore, the Chazal say that a person who gets angry, it's a strange God. It means that you can't tolerate the acceptance of reality. So you try to change reality to suit your own purposes and motives. The Gemara seems to say that the underlying personality is revealed in anger. Mm-hmm. That the underlying personality is revealed in anger. The only thing I would say is that fortunately you don't have to deal most of the time with the underlying personality. Well, let me explain. Okay, yeah, there's two types of frustration. Frustration can result in two possibilities, two different paths. One path is that when I'm frustrated, so now I have to readjust myself, and the other path is that I simply lash out at reality, a vain attempt to change reality. Anger is a vain attempt to change reality. That's what anger is. Okay. That is Avodah Zarah. Because Avodah Zorah, the whole central idea of Avodah Zorah is to cause reality to conform to my own needs and wants. That's the purpose. That's the whole essence of Avodah Zorah. That's why they do all these things. They make all these elaborate types of, ceremonials. The elaborate ceremonials are really just to make nature conform to their own wishes. Right. That's basically what it is.
That's exactly what it is. It's a person trying to get everything to conform, the external world to conform to his internal wishes. That's about it. That's kas. That's why Chazal singled out kas. It's a very bad thing. It's something which stands in the way of a person's perfection to a tremendous degree. Not that a person shouldn't get frustrated. Everybody has to get frustrated. It's part of human nature. A person must get frustrated. But the question is, what is the next step after the frustration? There's two routes, internal and external. The internal is the correct one. The external is the Avodah Zarah. That's the person gets angry and a person is frustrated, and what he does is, and he says to himself, "Ah, this is a bad day today." And then tomorrow he's just looking forward to the bad situation to pass over, and he's going to start tomorrow anew. That's already borders on Avodah Zarah, because even that, that's a mild form. It's a mild form. Because what it shows is that he can't really conform to the situation. He can't really bend his emotions to the situation. That's really what the Chazal was saying over it. Next thing is Vishuv Yom Ech. I don't want to be misunderstood over here. I don't mean that a person should not try to exert his influence on reality. Mm-hmm. That's not what I mean. I mean, that's the whole Torah, is that a person should do that. I mean, we go to we have to be bona based on Mikdash. We have to, as a matter of fact, I mean, go to battle. We have to do a lot of things to change reality. I mean, Dor HaMelech changed a lot of reality, but that's not koetz. That's with a rational plan, that a person knows rationally exactly what he's doing and how to go about it. That's part of godless Adam. That's the greatness of man, that man can take reality and mold it and improve it. That he's supposed to do. But here we're talking about a situation where he can't. There is no possible way. He simply can't accept an inherent element in reality. That's a different thing. That's a different thing. What? Well, if he gets sick. If he gets sick and he can't take it. That's not where a person says, look, I'm sick, and now what I have to do is rationally make every attempt to cure myself, to get myself healed. That is a person supposed to do that. The rabbi, this is very much, as a matter of fact, there is a misconstrued religious idea that people should just give themselves over, be passive, and whatever happens, God will take care of it. That's against Yadis. Yadis does not believe in that. Anyone that reads Tanakh comes clear. I mean, that this is not the attitude of Yadis. But there is a different kind of situation where you simply can't tolerate the inherent nature of reality doesn't conform to your wishes, and then you get angry. A person lost his money and goes and commits suicide. That's an example of that's koes. It's not that he has a constructive method of going about and improving his situation. That's the whole Torah, is to do that.
It means
you see, a person who accepts God accepts the reality that God gave him. That's a part of acceptance of God. Acceptance of God comes to us Not directly through God, because we have no way. We don't know God. Yadis is the only religion which maintains that there is. We have no concept whatsoever of God inherently, but we know God via certain manifestations, and we accepting the reality that God presented or laid out before us is a part of Kabbalah Samach Hashemayim, accepting God. Very important part. So, therefore, a person who is koes is denies God. And that's why it's over the Varzah. It's denial of God. That's the other side of the coin of why it's over the Varzah. It's good you mention it. Does the person's anger show really what his true nature is? I mean, if that's the case, so then the Gemara seems to say you're right. That other Chazal seems to be the opposite. You shouldn't be Maratza Chavercha B'Shas Kasa. Wait 3 days until he calms down. Apparently there's more to him than just this anger. This is just, apparently what we're saying is that, you know, try to get to the other side of his personality. See, the question is, what is the real person? So the Gemara says there's three ways a person is nicker. One of them is through his anger. So in other words, in his anger, he really reveals what he is. If that's the case, so everything else is just defenses. So it's a show. I mean, a person, you don't want to show another person your bad side. So when you talk to him, you have all your defenses working, you know, and you're very careful. But that's not the real you. The real you is the underlying you. But then why does it tell you to wait if that's the case? If that's the real personality, so then why does it tell you to wait I mean, they forget it. This is his real personality. Don't have anything to do with him anymore. That's it. You mean the defenses are part of your personality? See, that is hard to accept. I can't accept the idea that the defenses are really a part of the real personality. Why? I'll tell you. Now, it's a little different. You're right over there, but you have to go one step deeper. But it's not the defenses. I want you to know, defenses are definitely not a part of the real person. Defenses are a phony thing. The defenses are something that people use in order to make sure that the real emotions aren't revealed. And when they really want to do something, they immediately they're quicking and they're disguising everything they're doing. That can't be the part of the real personality. Defenses are a negation. A defense, by definition, is a negative thing. It's a negation of the true personality. So how could the defenses be the real personality? Anger actually is a way of dealing with frustration. That's what anger. That's the anger that they mean. It's a way of dealing with frustration. Which direction do you take? If you lash out at the external world, that's one direction. If you work on the internal, it's another direction. Yeah. It's really... You see the way Chazal talk about the Tikkun HaMidos, it's a whole science. You can't just... it's not just a matter of be good and do this and do that. That's a simple idea that you teach kids when they go to school. But when you get older, you understand it's a little deeper than that. There's a way a person in real has to be able to understand the emotion that's dominating his life and preventing it from accepting reality and trace it back, understand it, and have a knowledge of it. That's the way he could free himself from it. He can't free himself from it in any other way. Perfection is a type of knowledge. It has to be through knowledge. If it's not knowledge, he doesn't understand himself, he's not going to get anywhere. Yes? Apparently they hold it's excusable. It's excusable. They say, yeah, because they say you shouldn't try to pacify your friend when he's in the midst of his anger. You wait a few days till he calms down. Look, he was angry then, and now he'll be much better, and, give him a chance. So you see, apparently, that the anger is not really his true nature. Otherwise, there's no mitigating circumstances, so then forget about it. Yes? The answer is from the Rambam. The answer is the Rambam. The Rambam says... The Rambam, when he explains Malkus, that's the Rambam where he explains Malkus, that you force a person. A person doesn't want to give his wife a divorce, and the Bezdin decides that he has to give her a divorce. So in those days they didn't have the problems after that. So the Bezdin would simply give him Malkus until a divorce has to be given with his own free will. So he has to say, I want to give it. The man says, I don't want to divorce my wife. So the Rambam says that Bezdin gives him Malkus until he says, I want to do it. And then he gave the divorce from his own free will. That's the halacha. So the Rambam, usually the Rambam just brings down the halacha, but in this case the Rambam wasn't satisfied bringing out halacha because he was bothered with the apparent contradiction. I mean, halacha has to be his own free will. This doesn't look like his own free will. So the Rambam gives an interesting answer. The Rambam says, in reality, everybody wants to do the right thing. Everybody wants to do that which is good. But the only thing is that man's evil inclination somehow or other gets in the way and doesn't allow him to express his underlying desire to do the good. So he says, now when Bezdin gives him Malkus, what they do is they address themselves to the evil inclination. And once it becomes reduced, then his true desire to do that which is right emerges. And he says, I want to give my wife a divorce. That's what the Rambam says. But what does the Rambam mean, really? It's not just the Rambam's trying to give a... What? What does the Rambam really mean? What does the Rambam mean? Rambam isn't a joke. What the Rambam really means is like... The Rambam means that the truth of the matter is a person, every individual, really wants to do the good. And it's an interesting philosophy. Most people don't really live according to this idea. I mean, they think they do, but if they look in their practical life, they'll realize they don't. The Rambam says that a person really wants to do the good. Why? Because the good means that which is better for you. That which the system that the Torah presents is the best system of life. If a person would realize the happiness that they would have by living according to the system of Torah, they'd run to it. Because basically everybody in the world is after happiness. I mean, there's one thing that a person is after. Any individual that has ever, any human being has ever existed, is after one thing, happiness. There's no other thing possible. Now, the truth of the matter is the system of the Torah is that system which is devised by God, which will give man that thing which he's looking through everything that he does. All his attempts and everything, he really, a person would give anything to have a moment of happiness. As a matter of fact, I think that it was Goethe one time said that he said that he said when I could think of the times in my life that I was really happy, like he says, two or three times in my entire life. I reflect over my entire life. I was somewhat of a philosopher. So,
come on.
He was like a writer philosopher, sort of. He wasn't really a strict philosopher, but he was a chacham, he was a pekeach, wise man. So, a person, and psychologists say also that a person would just about give almost anything for a moment of pleasure that a person has in his life. Where there is no frustration, leaves such an indelible impression on his mind that, like, he would almost do anything to get back to that state.
Okay.
It's true. It's true. A moment of happiness is something that a person doesn't forget. A person has a good day, a moment of happiness somewhere. They'll always remember it. Try to preserve that idea, that thought in their mind. And the truth of the matter is, what everyone is after is happiness. There's no other possibility. And the Torah really is a system through which a person can get this. So everybody wants the good. There is no one, the worst, the most evil, the worst Russian in the world. All he wants is happiness. The only thing is he has a wrong idea as to where exactly it's going to be, where and how it's going to be achieved. But it's not that he's after something different. So the Rambam says is that when the person finally says, Rotzani, that the physical pain coerces him to say Rotzani. The Rotzani is really an expression, since this really is the good, that Bezdin has decided he really should divorce his wife. They know it's not fair, and he's just really he's harming her, he's torturing her for no reason, unjustly. So now, when he says Rotzani, that Rotzani reflects the true desire that every person has to do that which is right. To do that which is right and that which is good. And since Bezdin has decided this is what he's supposed to do, and the Torah says that this is the thing that he should follow, this is the rational thing. They're telling him the good thing to do. He can't take it now. He wants to get even with her. He wants to harm her. He wants to get her back. And he has all kinds of ideas that are controlling him. But those emotions are really just emotions of the moment that are controlling his personality. But really, the underlying personality of a person is he wants that which is good. So the Rambam says that it's just an emotional thing which is controlling him. So Bezdin simply approaches him with a counter-emotion. With a counter-emotion. Now it's one emotion against the other. Now it's a counter-emotion. So one emotion cancels out the other one. And once the emotions are canceled out, now he really wants to give a divorce for his wife. You see, what the Rambam means, it's not a game. The Rambam means like this. Not that the rotz, of course, the reason why the man says rotzani is because of the pain of the pain that the Bezdin is causing him. There's no question about it. But simultaneously, the reason why he doesn't want to is also because of another emotion. It's just another crazy emotion. So what Bezdin does is simply evens out the score, where it's not one emotion balances out the other. Once you reach the point that one emotion balances out the other, now the real desire of the person is to do the good. So it's not that it's not so much that this Rotzani means, the Rotzani over here that he's saying is not the important thing. In other words, that Rotzani is to remove the pain. But once he says Rotzani, you realize that he's in a state where there's an equal balance between emotions. And then we know that his real desire is to do the good. You follow?
No,
you understand what I mean?
Why can't you say that to you?
At that moment, you have to understand, at the moment of the great pain, the man is not attached anymore to the emotion of harming his wife. He's not attached anymore to that emotion, because this pain is pervading his whole psyche. So therefore, he's not attached to that emotion anymore. Once he's reached that state that he's not attached to that emotion anymore, now we know he wants to do the good, because he's a person, every person wants to do the good. It's just there was an emotion that was preventing it from that. That's what the Rambam means.
But now?
All Bezdin accomplishes is they remove the power of the other emotion that's preventing him. You understand? In other words, the other emotion, the emotion of harming his wife, is preventing him. The emotion of revenge is preventing, is right now dominating his personality. Now the Malkus just removes the domination of the emotion of revenge, because now he's concerned about his own personal pain. Now once the emotion of revenge isn't dominating him anymore, now we know what he really wants. We know he really wants to do the good. It's just he was under the domination of the emotion of revenge. Now Bezdin has removed that domination. Once the domination is removed, we know what he really wants. He really wants the good. He's a good person. Very good person. It's a halacha. It can't be, this can't be a matter of a way out philosophy. This is a solid halacha.
Halacha is only doing the good only?
See, Terry's asking, what about the reverse? What about a person who wants to do the good, and the case of, we went through, our people went through, right, in order to cause them to accept, for instance, Avodah Zarah, things like that, Christianity, Avodah Zarah. So what about that situation? No, on the contrary. Over there, the real underlying personality does not want to do that, because that's not the good. But the pain, the emotion of the... See, if, for instance, if a Jew was coerced to accept a Avodah Zarah. So over there, it's just the opposite. The real underlying personality wants the good, and the good is the true ideas, which is Torah. But the emotion of the pain causes the person to accept it. You see? That's not really an acceptance. That's why we say that a person is supposed to give his life for Kiddush Hashem, but if a person doesn't give his life for Kiddush Hashem, he's not Chayav Nisa.
Mm-hmm.
Because his underlying personality didn't really want that. It was just an emotion of the moment that he couldn't overcome. You see. But the reason why our system is the only system he can really want is very simple. Because this is the only system which is the real good. And so the person wants the real good. There's no... You understand what I mean? Ki ani soni, I'll praise you, ki ani soni, because you gave me pain, but the healing Yeshua, and this turned out to be my greatest salvation. So pain is a wonderful thing. Aristotle was right, but it's not just the physical pain, not just the pain of the body that's an alarm that tells the person that he should look into see what's wrong physically. But there's another pain, there's the pain of the soul, which also acts as an alarm to show the person there's something wrong, that he has to correct it. And that's the greatest blessing. That's the pasuk in the Torah, There's no animosity, there's no hatred in God that he wants to harm any one of his creatures. He only has one. His nature is to help that which he created. That's his nature. Alti Rasha b'Einecha. A person is not allowed to think of himself as wicked, precisely for that reason. That's right. A person is not allowed to. Lo'olam yirah d'masatzmo kilu chetzi chaya v'chetzi zaka. He shouldn't have an emotional pull either way. He shouldn't feel he's righteous, because that's also not correct. And he shouldn't have a pull that he's bad. He should be even keel. He should feel about himself in a neutral way. Not to be overcome. There's two emotions in there. One emotion, man wants to raise him to great heights, wants to make him think that he's great. And another emotion in man, on the contrary, is the pessimism. Draws him down, wants to make him feel small. So Chazal say that a person should look at himself as if he's 50-50. What does it mean? It means he shouldn't be under the influence of either draw.
Either
emotion. Shouldn't be under the influence. That's right, exactly. So therefore, in that manner, he'll be able to make the best use of the situation. I think, look, maybe this is really an onesh min hashamayim from the Ashgacha Pratis to improve myself, and it'll exhaust all the possibilities. And in that way, if it is, then he'll be able to make good use of it. And even if it isn't, he might be able, it's possible that he could use it for his benefit. Either way. So that's really the purpose. But there's no... God is not malicious. God has no anger in him. The only thing that God does is good deeds. Good. Only good. Yes. Punishment after death. The Rambam does not accept it. Doesn't accept it. No. He does not. He says, Gehenim, he says, is not really what people think. And he says, on the contrary, he says Gehenim is on this world. He says... So the Rambam disagrees, but the Balei Tosfos, I will be honest with you, the Balei Tosfos disagree with the Rambam. The Balei Tosfos maintain, and we say Kaddish for that reason. So you see, we haven't accepted the view of the Rambam. But I hope that the Rambam was wrong on this one, personally. Because what it means is like this. If we say that there is Gehenna, what it means is that the soul, you see, like you see over here, he says, Shuv yom echad lefnei misascha. You should do tshuva one day before you die. Why one day? Of course, the Gemara says, you never know when you're going to die, so therefore you have to do tshuva every day. But what's the idea, the inherent idea of one day before you die? Because the soul is judged by the state that it's in a moment before death. That really is the way the soul is judged. Now, the way the soul is, you see, a soul, for instance, I mean, I have to be descriptive about it, but I think at least we can have some idea. A soul, for instance, whose love and desire is Torah, continues to exist because in the next world, that's precisely what is done there. It has an association to what goes on there. So therefore, it can continue. But if the soul's desire is for eating steaks, you understand, after his death, he's not going to be able to do that anymore. So therefore, the soul simply can't exist in the world to come. It's not a punishment. It's just a natural thing. Now, Tosfos maintains that the soul, that there are different elements in the soul. And the person isn't just a simple mechanism. So really a soul could have an admixture. He really wants to do the good, but then there's a part of him that's attached to the physical. So what Tosfos maintains is that such a soul, God purifies. God changes that soul, and it undergoes a painful process of separating its elements. Because part of it is after the real good, and part of it is after something which is a physical thing. So it can't really enter the Olam Haba because it's not in a pure state. So what Tosfos maintains, that's the concept of Gehenna. Gehenna means that God purifies the soul and he separates the elements so that it eventually can really be in the have the world to come, have Gan Eden. That's what Tosfos maintains. The Rambam didn't maintain such a process exists. But you see that Klal Yisrael accepted the idea of Tosfos. Klal Yisrael accepted the idea of Tosfos. That's the idea of saying Kaddish for 11 months. So, and then there are a lot of Gemaras that would seem to indicate more. Yes, there's a Gemara. There's a Gemara, for instance, about Elisha ben Avuya, the Gemara about Acher, who was really like a Spinozist, an Aristotelian. And he was a mean point of Chazal's Kofar Bicker. But the Gemara says that he had a part in the world to come because he was in Gehenna for a certain amount of time. But then he had a part in the world. He was a great chacham. Great, great chacham. So you see that most chazal seem to go along with what the Balei Tosfos say, and Klal Yisrael has accepted the view of the Balei Tosfos. But the Rambam, of course, doesn't worry about the chazal. Rambam has his own way of explaining them. But that's the machlokas. I mean, I would hope that Tosfos is right. If the Rambam is right, then we don't have any chance. Tyson is right, then we still have a chance.
What about...
Yes. No matter how bad. Because the ones that are really Rishoyim, it has to be the... That's why the Gemara says the most is 12 months, and the ones... That's the bad. But the ones that are really Rishoyim, that's total devastation. There's no cure for that. That, on the contrary, that means he's totally destroyed. Destroyed forever. No, they're not all equal afterwards for the simple reason that there's two things, you see? There's two things. The attachment to the physical causes two problems. First of all, it causes a soul which has a dual attachment, so it can't belong anywhere. That's number one. Two, insofar as it's attached to the physical, it's not attached to the spiritual. Now, once it's separated, the only thing that can be done by separation is that the pure part should remain. But it can give him a greater attachment. That which he lost out by being attached to the physical, he's always going to have. He always will be missing. So he will not have the same level as a person who was on a higher level. But he will simply be able to be in the state of Gan Eden. That's the way Taisa is. That's right. That's what it means. You can't do mitzvahs, and that's what the Gemara says. Mitzvahs you can't do in Olam Haba. And that's why, because you can't do it, so there is no chance for change anymore. The only time that we have control over the structure of our inner nature is only here, and it's only through mitzvahs. After Misa, that's it. There's no more control over it. That's why they say, is it Tanoi? And Tosfos meets him on his deathbed. He was afraid. Why? He says, because I'm going to meet Melech Malchei Amlochim, and he says, and I can't do any more mitzvahs. So that's it. It's all over. So the Gemara says that he mentioned the state that he was in right before he died. And again, they say about the Gro also. Lomigayan is, he looked at his tzitzis, he says, here you can do, here a person can still buy a pair of tzitzis. And with that little few cents that he spends on the tzitzis, it could change his whole life. If he understands the mitzvah, it could raise him to a higher level, he could change his soul. But over there, that's it. Nothing more could be done. That's the finality. So, that's what Gemara says. That's like Erev Shabbos and Shabbos. The person that prepares an Erev Shabbos has what to eat on Shabbos. Ain't he preparing an Erev Shabbos? That's a long Shabbos over there. Time to answer the original question. Very good. I'm glad you're keeping track of it. Yeah, right. The question was, which is the true personality? The personality of the of anger, or the personality which is not really existent at the time of anger? So what's the answer? The answer is that there are two underlying personalities. There's an underlying personality of the Yetzer Hara, of the evil side of man, and that has defenses which a person uses to cover up. You see, and when a person gets angry, the defenses are gone, and you see his real Yetzer Hara. You see the structure of the instinctual part of his nature when he gets angry. That's what the Gemara means. The Shlosh Dvarim Adam Nikar. It means you can see the structure. Every person has a different structure in his Yetzer Hara, in his underlying nature. I mean the underlying psychological, instinctual nature. There's given structures to each individual. And when he gets angry, that's when you'll see what the structure is. Okay. But the Torah doesn't give up on man. The Torah says that is one part of his personality. But there's a deeper part of his personality. The deeper part of his personality is the part that's really looking for the good. That every individual has, that is looking for the good. That's the part that has to do with Chachma, the Tzelem Elokim. So we say that when a person is angry, it's true he's shown the structure of his instinctual nature, but Yadis does not allow you to judge him by that. Because that's his instinctual nature, right? You got a glimpse of his true structure of his instinctual nature. But it doesn't mean that he's going to always be an instinctual nature. Because there's another part of his personality that's looking for the good. And that part is really the underlying personality. That's the part that says, that's the part that the Rambam means, Kofanas Hashem Arotzani. That's the part. So therefore, you can't really judge the person. So the question is, what is the real personality? There are two aspects to the human personality. There's only one thing that will decide which one of these two will prevail, and that's his Bechira Chavshus. That's his free will. See? So when the Gemara says that in the three ways a person is nicker, it means you've got a chance to look beneath the surface at one of the personalities, the instinctual part. You've got a good glimpse of that one. Okay? But that's not the total person. The total person is what he does with it. And there's another underlying part of man that's looking for, everybody's looking for the good. Yes? The individual that is all defenses is no good, because he doesn't know his nature. And the individual that is, that as you said, expresses himself freely and has no defenses is also bad. They're both bad. Because one of them is acting out the primitive things by expressing himself without defenses, and the other one is just hiding it. The right way is... The person who acts him out doesn't know. The person who acts him out does not know. The right way is to act in society is the way that would appear to be defenses, but not really defenses. Which means the person is aware, has knowledge of his own instincts. He knows what they are. And he knows that he can't allow them to be expressed. First of all, it's not proper, you see. But he doesn't deny to himself that he has them. He's aware of his defenses. That is the proper way to act. So that he doesn't act out his emotions, and yet he doesn't fool himself in thinking that he is really, essentially, as righteous as he presents himself to others. He knows that he has to do that because that's the benefit of society. I mean, people are acting out their emotions, they're going around killing people. No, you have to be polite to people, he has to do all the things that make society a better place to live in. But he should simultaneously realize that it's not always his desire to be so good as he makes himself appear. See? He has to be aware of that, he has to have knowledge of himself. But because of that, he shouldn't act aggressively. That doesn't make any sense, because then he's just harming people, then he's just acting out his emotions. Neither one of those cases is good. See, today it's a big problem. Actually, in today's society, these two things are vying for expression. There's the one group that is that wants to be more suppressed, you know, and the other goes, let it loose, you know. Both are, since you see these arguments are not taking place between Chachmei Dor, you know what I mean? So you realize immediately that this has nothing to do with reality. See? Each one's just expressing another emotion. Chazal, when they look into it, they put the finger on the right point, which is that a person has to have the knowledge, but he has to express himself in the most proper fashion. But the knowledge, he must inform himself. The knowledge he must have. There's one more thing I just want to add. Before the defenses are set up because the aggression realizes that it wouldn't, I'm just using aggression to be anything, but the aggression or the emotional desire realizes it will not be successful. It will not be successful. If I go to this person and I really show him what my real intent is, he's not going to deal with me. So I have to make believe that I'm honest, and you know, this way I want to deal with me. And a certain amount of honesty I have to carry through, that's shown, but only to the point where it's necessary for getting along, see? That's expediency. The defenses are really just a backlash. It's a modification of the original desire. Sometimes, however, it's an attempt to fool the self also. See? That is more harmful. That would be more harmful. If you're fooling somebody else, it might be bad, ethically. But if you're fooling yourself, it's horrible. It means it's hopeless. Because then simply the man can never really improve himself. Okay? It's not that the Gemara is saying you shouldn't reveal your emotions. What the Gemara is saying is that you should perfect yourself so that you accept the reality that God gave you and you don't have the emotion. That's what the Gemara means. There's just one thing. One point I want to mention. I think it's perhaps a subtle point that most people don't realize about the Rambam that we discussed. There's one thing that results from the realm that we discussed, and that is that the idea of evil, I think this is an important point, even though it's a little bit, I mean, emotionally it's sophisticated, I think it's important. The idea of evil is really a human idea. It doesn't actually exist the way we really perceive it. See, the idea of evil, when we think of evil, we have a certain feeling about it. Like, you think of a Rush, you think he's an evil man. There's a certain emotion of evil that we attach. That emotion of evil is not really, strictly speaking, not from reality. It doesn't exist. It's something that a person, it's an individual, it's a human thing. It really comes from our own nature, how we feel towards our own desires. You see? That's really the source of it. I can't go into it too much over there, but I'm just explaining to you. It comes from our own feelings that we have towards ourselves. It's our own personal feeling. The true idea of evil doesn't have that emotional connotation to it. The true idea of evil, as you see, since the Rambam says, everybody really wants the good. So evil is just a misguided attempt at the good. If that's what it is, rationally, you can't attach the emotion of evil that most people have towards an evil person. You see? Like a horror feeling, evil, like Hitler, like an evil horror. See, those feelings come from our own personal emotion. That's not really in reality. That's a human feeling. The truth of that, and that's what I mentioned several times. By the case of Shmuel, when he had Agag was a vicious Hitler, vicious animal. But simply, Shmuel just cut him in half with it. We didn't try to torture him, this evil. Because evil is really a distortion. Evil, when a person's on a philosophical level, he sees evil in a different way. Not an emotional reaction to evil. He sees it philosophically. He sees it as an unfortunate distortion of the Tzelem Elokim. It's an unfortunate distortion. It's a distortion. And as a distortion, Shmuel had to remove him. But it wasn't done with an emotional reaction to it. That's something, and that's why if a person has that idea, I want you to know, I just want to continue because I think it's an important point. If a person has that idea and lives by that idea, he will be able to raise the level of his activity, his performance, his experience, beinorum lachavero, between him and his fellow man. Because if he realizes that his chaver is also after the good, just as much as he is, then this will help him to realize that if he has any feelings of hatred towards his chaver, because his chaver expresses certain weaknesses, he might think into it, and he might see that the emotions that he has are really just projections of emotions that he himself is dealing with
within his own personality, you see. And if he realizes rationally that his chavra is really the and it'll break the breach of identification.